The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here is David Littlejohn with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, look who's back in studio after a little bit of a break for the best Tuesday you've had all week. Welcome to the True Wealth Show. This is Dave Littlejohn and back at it with my sidekick.
Aha, Matt Dixon in the studio. And for all of you that can't see David's face, he's glowing.
Glowing.
He's glowing.
Love the radio show. Favorite time of the week for me.
Were you having withdrawals? Like, give me that microphone.
So, believe it or not, no. Right? I was not. I had a great time. We took family vacation. Mm-hmm. And for the listeners that are like, bro, aren't you here? Right? So sometimes, yes, even with the markets having the issues that they've had, it was scheduled for one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I got an awesome team. And so we're able to do that and give each other a spell every now and then. So it was a great sanity break.
Well, and per the usual, the minute you step out of the office, what happened to the market?
Markets went up.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, I come back on a Friday and everything starts going down. We're like, mm-hmm. What is the story here?
Leave, David. Get out now.
Just go take more vacations. I'm like, this is a good thing for mm-hmm. me.
There you go.
So anyhow, I appreciate the team having my back. Well, I got a little R&R. The family and I headed out to North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Mm.
Right? Got some family out there. And if you don't know, if you're just joining on the radio show, while I have been a naturalized Oregonian since age single digit low, I did go to school in the Carolinas for college.
Okay.
And then made my way back and landed in Douglas County, Oregon in 2002. Right. So I've been 20 years,
yeah,
more than 20 years that I have called this home, which makes this the longest place I've ever lived any one spot.
Mm-hmm.
So this is officially the most home I have in my lifetime. Anyway, it was fun to go back, have family back there and got to catch up with them and enjoyed some time on the beach and in the ocean. And we, you know, ate and we played.
Did you swim in the ocean? Was it warm enough?
Absolutely.
No, yeah?
When we first got there, I'm going to take a stab that the ocean was probably in the mid to high 80s.
Whoa.
Yeah. It was.
No joke.
It was warm, right? You know, it wasn't. I've been out there when the ocean was, it was so hot that it wasn't even refreshing, right? It was that warm, but it was still refreshing enough. It was definitely not cold. You could walk right in. There was no system shock of like, okay, that's an adjustment. Nope. It was just great.
Do you ever watch Shark Week? Did that go through your mind at all while you're getting in the water? Like,
you know, I've been a water sports guy for most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I tried most of it, whether it's dragging behind a boat or scuba or surfing or boogie boarding.
Not much about the water scares you.
Wakeboard. Yeah. So I'm pretty comfortable. And I know, first of all, look, I'm a numbers guy.
The odds.
I live in the statistics,
mm-hmm.
right? And the statistics are, I mean, how many thousands and thousands of people are swimming in the ocean daily? And then you get this report. I mean, like, you are far more likely to be in a car accident than
I think
have a shark
you're
attack.
Even more likely to be struck by lightning.
It's
than,
possible.
I think so. I think
it
if
is
I remember
super
that correctly.
Rare. And the incidents that it happens are usually scenarios, especially in the Carolinas, right? They're pretty small sharks. 3 to 6 feet would be a big one. Now, there was a great white that was spotted that was a mile offshore.
While you were there?
Yeah.
Oh, but it was a mile out. And
it was
a mile out. You're like 20 feet out in the
and
ocean.
Here's what people don't necessarily follow. This is a very so the intercoastal islands in the Carolinas, which is also, if you're trying to get a mental picture of this, think like this was Kitty Hawk and that kind of area too.
Mm-hmm.
So up and down the coast, that's where they learned to fly, right? The first airplanes and the Wright brothers were at Kitty Hawk. These are sort of like sand dune style islands, but they're not real high.
Mm.
So there's not a bunch of elevation, but they're sand islands. Or at least a lot of that. There's not a ton of rock. So there, you get this sand buildup that can go out into the ocean for hundreds of yards, and it's not very deep.
So at low tide, I was able to walk out probably 100 yards at low tide, and it was about mid-chest depth. So and the waves are just windswept waves. There's not significant surf because it's so flat. You don't get any material curled to the waves. So it's not a good surfing beach, but it is
could
a good
frolic in the water.
Could you
have launched a kayak and just paddled out there?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely you could have. Now, you would want a kayak that could bail because if you were in a non-bailing kayak, you'd take water over the sides and you'd slosh it. But you could do it. So it's a very navigable body of water. And we were there, and it was not real rough. But the point being that a really big shark, you know, you're swimming in 4 feet of water.
Right.
So does a giant shark want to make its way up in a really sandy,
the odds
murky,
are low.
4 foot deep water, fairly warm for a big shark, you know? And so it's like, I don't know if that's really what it's all about.
Gotcha.
So, again, not terribly concerned about it. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's also like we could get hit by an asteroid. Not
so,
probable, but... not impossible.
So in this, you know, time frame that you had to reflect on the radio show, did you come up with any awesome ideas for what we're going to talk about today?
Well, it's awesome ideas to me. That's a funny phraseology, Matt, because it implies like some things are awesome and some things aren't. First of all,
well, we only talk about the awesome things
right, so
here on the
whatever
show.
Whatever it is, it's going to be awesome, right?
There you go.
So what do you want to talk about that's going to be awesome? I think we should go with your idea.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I've been doing this for years now, and sometimes you get in the weeds and we forget about just the stuff that a lot of investors really need to revisit now and then. And it's like, it's not just a back to the basics, but it's a nuts and bolts, the stuff that everybody talks about. Other radio show hosts talk about it, but maybe we don't crack it open and provide enough depth. Right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about like when Dave Ramsey shows up. And by the way, I'm not trashing Dave Ramsey. I want to make sure everybody knows that. Like, I think he does a great job of getting people that are like out of the frying pan and in the fire, and he helps them at least back into the frying pan. Right. But there are times when there's advice that's thrown out that's so generic as to not be terribly useful. For example, I think you should buy mutual funds. You should get growth and income, and aggressive growth and international funds.
Right.
And I'm going, what is that?
Yeah.
Right? Like, what does that mean? And there's a reason that Dave Ramsey keeps those investments so broad and generic. And it's because it's not really advice when it's super broad and generic.
Yeah,
because
he's basically saying just go buy the entire market and let it sit there.
Well, and he's kind of saying, I think you should talk with a professional if you don't know how to do this and figure it out. And this is the categories you're kind of looking at. But the dirty little secret is they're not specific categories. Like a growth investment.
Yeah, what does that mean?
It can be defined both domestic or internationally. It can be small companies, big companies. It can be a lot. It can be public or it can be private. I mean, there's all kinds of elements to it where you go, what does that mean, right? And in the most generic sense, a growth company is any company that is growing and typically is not paying a dividend out to investors, but instead is reinvesting the dividend back into the additional growth of the company. So that's a growth company, whereas you have a dividend paying company, that's a growth with income. It's paying the dividend out. And then if you've got a value company, that would be a company that's considered on sale relative to the value of its parts. So it could be a low book to market share value. So there are just different elements. And so he didn't really address those. But you know what we can do, Matt?
What's that?
We could address those.
Let's do it. Yeah. Let's just unpack it all right now for the listeners.
So we'll talk about funds today. And there's different types. Exchange traded funds, mutual fund, exchange traded notes,
annuities,
annuities, which, you know, a lot of stuff. So why don't we talk a little bit about the types of ways investments get packaged up and resold?
Ooh, I like this.
Okay?
I like where
we're
going here.
I think that's where this is. How do these things get packaged up and resold, and what do we as investors need to understand about those so that we can make informed decisions?
I like this.
Know what it's like. What are we paying for? What aren't we paying for? What should we expect? and maybe even some gotchas.
Mm.
But the first gotcha of the day.
How about obscene profit break gotchas?
Yep, we gotcha taking a break. So we got to do that, and then we got you waiting around to come back on the other side of this break where we're going to unpack some of this. So stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, Matt, and that's how wisdom gets developed.
That's right.
So welcome to going from wisdom to now wisdom through experience.
Mm-hmm.
So welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, ladies and gentlemen. Dave Littlejohn in studio.
Matt Dixon.
With Matt Dixon.
Yep.
All right. And if you're just joining us, remember you can grab the podcast and get connected here. Today, we're going to unpack a little bit of how it's funny, we're going to unpack what gets packaged.
Wow.
Right?
We're going to unwrap it
unwrap it a little bit. When investments get packaged up and then sold as a basket of something,
mm-hmm.
okay? And this happens, like, what are some of the ways that investments get packaged, Matt?
I think the most generic version of that would probably be a mutual fund.
Okay.
Right? And some of the backdrop there for people that don't know. So say you want to go have some ownership in Tesla and Apple and Microsoft, but you only have, say, $60 to invest, right?
Okay.
And you want to own those companies.
I want to get started.
Right.
$60 burning a hole in my pocket.
And I want to own all these companies. And then you go and you look and you say, well, you know, Tesla's at, I don't know, what is it right now?
888 or something.
Yeah. So, darn it, I can't buy a share of Tesla, but you might be able to go get a, when we kind of talked about this earlier, maybe a growth focused mutual fund that has
Tesla.
Yeah, like maybe 5% of the weighting is Tesla and maybe 3% is Microsoft. And so it owns a lot of different companies and it kind of divvies that up by that conglomerate of people that owns that mutual fund.
Right. I always joke and say this is like getting, you know, 10,000 of your closest friends you've never met together.
There you go.
Everybody pools your money. And then you get proportionate ownership to how much you throw in the pool, and that pool hires a team to go do the investing for you.
What's the benefit for the company itself, though? Do we want to talk about kind of how mutual funds,
the reason
why they do this for people?
Well, they get paid.
Yeah.
I mean,
and how they get paid,
way.
Right.
So, yes, but I want to set up a couple other things, too.
Sure.
So, because there's more than these are all packaged this way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mutual fund is an investment company pooling investor monies together and then allowing you to buy proportionate ownership in that pool. So you could buy Tesla and that $60 could actually buy some portion of Tesla represented in the ownership of that mutual fund.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things to understand is that you have indirect ownership of Tesla. You have the beneficial, the beneficial amount that it changes.
You're saying that
the mutual fund is the owner because like you don't get to vote
mm-hmm.
for as a shareholder of Tesla now,
right?
When you don't own Tesla directly. You own it through a mechanism that owns it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So that mechanism is going to be the one that gets the voting, if you will.
It would be different than if I created an individual account and I went and bought a full share of Tesla.
If you bought Tesla, then exactly. So that's the first thing
that's
to consider.
That's kind of the general crux of the first
and
element.
So
there.
Every time that you start to see these things packaged up, realize that you're not directly owning these positions any longer. Like you go buy Tesla, then you buy a share of Tesla and you own it.
Mm-hmm.
You're an equity holder in Tesla now. And that also means you get the rights as a shareholder. So you'll get a proxy vote when there's voting issues for the stock and so forth. So you're not going to see those. But there's other things besides. So there are a lot of things that look like mutual funds. I think this is where I wanted to talk about.
Oh, okay.
Because we can then compare and contrast the way they all get paid. Okay. So a mutual fund is pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
A company is doing this on your behalf. So you're actually going to pay the company, and then they're going to produce the mutual fund and get it. And you know lots of these companies, right? Like Vanguard or Fidelity or Janus or all those different names that you heard of. Mm-hmm. They all make mutual funds. Okay. What about exchange-traded funds?
They're similar. They're really similar. Like, you could go buy, like, XLE. It's a ETF, right? And it has energy holdings.
Now, you're throwing out letters here. So XLE is the ticker symbol, but the ETF is an acronym that stands for exchange-traded fund.
Right.
Okay, so if you went out and bought this energy exchange-traded fund,
right,
then what?
Then you would have ownership in a similar way where you are, you know, I think that one's structured where it's like 40% Exxon and 40% Chevron. And then there's a bunch of other smaller companies within that platform.
I'm going to look this up now. That seems pretty heavily focused there, but go on.
Yeah. Did I say 40 or 20?
40.
Oh, 40%. Maybe it was 20% in Chevron and 20% in Exxon, I think is what it
happen.
Was.
Let's look at the holdings here.
Yeah.
Under the XLE, if I scroll it. So Exxon is 23%, Chevron is 20%. The next is ConocoPhillips, it's 4.64. Then you got about the same for EOG Resource, Schlumberger, Marathon, Pioneer, Phillips, Kinder Morgan, and Williams Company. So, It owns a bunch, but the top 10 holdings amount for almost 77% of the holdings.
Right. And the top two are over 40%.
Chevron and Exxon at 43.73% as of today's reporting.
So if you thought you were diversified, you might not be as diversified as you thought.
Right. Well, the interesting thing about this is, so it's still a basket of securities similar to a mutual fund.
Yeah.
How is an exchange-traded fund different?
It trades on the exchange. So you can go buy it similar to how you would buy a stock, which is different than how you would buy a mutual fund.
So can you walk me through the two primary differences between buying on an exchange versus buying a mutual
fund? So a mutual fund reassesses every day the value of the fund. And so where as an ETF, you would go and say, well, right now it's, you know, 1:20 in the afternoon, it's worth 85.46, and then, you know, a few seconds later it's worth 85.75 or whatever the numbers are, right? So the ETF is changing in value constantly. You can go out and buy it on the exchange, whereas a mutual fund, they're going to look at the value of that fund at the close of each day and then reprice.
Right. So what's happening here, if I can paraphrase, is with a mutual fund, you're buying it back from the company.
Exactly.
Right. And so the company doesn't allow you to buy the mutual fund in the middle of the day while it's trading. It waits until all of the trades have been completed at the end of the day, and it comes up with an end of the day price. And then when you redeem, that fund is going to sort of cash you out and take your money out of the pool and send it back to you.
Right.
And so when they do that, then there's going to be an accounting to figure out how much is yours, what your proportion and ownership was. They're going to send you the money when you sell, and they're also going to debit their fees out when they do it, right? The cost that it was associated. So they're going to net out your amount and send it to you now. And so you're redeeming it from the company that had created or structured the product. The exchange-traded fund is a little different because initial money that goes into it is used for a company to package everything up. And it's like they created a basket of stocks in this case, and then they took that basket and put it on an exchange to trade as a unit from between individuals or institutions. So you're not going to, in this case, the company that created the XLE that we were talking about is the SPDR, or the Spider company, right? So I think that's actually owned by BlackRock.
Okay.
But or maybe they're iShares. So but Spiders is the company that does this, so SPDR. And once they created that unit and started allowing it to trade amongst investors on an exchange, you didn't have to go to Spider and redeem it from them.
Right.
You could, like, I could sell my shares to you, Matt.
Right.
And so because it's now trading as a unit on the exchange, it sort of walks and talks like a stock after it's created. Now, there's a cost to create that basket. So an exchange-traded fund does have a small fee when it was creating the exchange-traded unit.
Mm-hmm.
But I've argued this a lot with people. There's folks that will say, well, the expense ratio of the exchange-traded fund is important. The lower the expense ratio, the better. Now, keep that in the back of your mind. Like, log that little one away. The expense ratios are kind of a deal, right? Because they are, but we're going to talk more about that. The expense ratio is it really an issue if I agree to buy it for one price from you and you agree to sell it to me for that price? Right? Because we're exchanging directly between each other. So other than the exchange itself that may make a transaction fee, are we paying the spider company to have to recreate the unit or to swap through them? The short answer is no.
No, because it's already been created.
Right. So one might suggest, well, the total value of the holdings inside of it include debiting out that fee to the company. But I would still suggest, even if that were true, there are times when exchange-traded funds trade at a premium or a discount mm-hmm. to their underlying holdings.
Right.
Okay, so that's an interesting thing. It's just because it represents all the holdings inside of it doesn't mean that it's always the exact price. Like, if you were to break it apart to the individual pieces, the value may be different as a unit investment than it
then
is
what
as
is
the
it
individual
actually trading
pieces.
For. Yeah.
Right. So it's just the question of
kind of
what
like how
does
we
it
say,
trade for,
yeah.
right? And so I realize that this is for some of you out there listening, you're like, what are they talking about? I'm just suggesting that the expense ratio is relevant, but it's less of a wag the dog event for an exchange traded fund perhaps than for a mutual fund, where I have to go to the mutual fund company to get my money back out. And so they're going to have extracted their fees from the money management costs mm-hmm. and then return my capital less fees.
I always like hearing when you kind of argue both sides of a coin, because you're really good at almost debating yourself. So if I'm an investor and I'm saying, hey, like, there's this mutual fund over here, and hey, there's this ETF over here, how could someone go about comparing and contrasting to see if that fund
right.
was
well,
right for them?
There are pros and cons to both. First
sure.
of all, mutual funds are fantastic because they allow you to do fractional investing. You don't have to buy a whole share.
Okay.
Right? With an exchange-traded fund, I can't buy 1.2 shares. I buy one share or I buy two shares, but I can't buy 1.5 shares.
Okay.
I can buy 1.5 shares of a mutual fund. I can buy 1.0034 shares of a mutual fund. So I always get to invest the full dollar,
mm-hmm.
right? There's no change left over that has to sit on the sides and not be invested. So it's great when you're getting started as an investor with low capital, because you can buy into a completely diversified portfolio that's fully professionally managed, and you can put all of your money to work, and you can start with low dollar figures.
So if someone had $100 and they said, well, I want to invest in four different areas. I want to invest in energy, financials, tech, and healthcare. They
could
put $25 into each of those four areas, and now you're invested how you want, and you own those fractional shares.
Exactly, and you can do that. And again, what's really cool about that is that your money's all invested.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting the benefit of diversification across all those different assets, right? And oftentimes, you're getting it cheaper than if you tried to go out and buy it manually, right? Because
mm-hmm.
if you think about what is the cost of making a trade in many environments. Now, there are some free trade environments. We'll talk about that in a minute. But somewhere, you're always paying for the transaction. It's paid
right.
for in one form or another. So free trades aren't really free. There's a gotcha somewhere else. But so typically, like if you go to a lot of places, that trading cost may be either free, in which they're selling your order flow to someone else so that they can see the trades before they're made,
mm-hmm.
right? Which means you're at a disadvantage in the marketplace now. Or you're going to pay a transaction charge. And that could be anywhere from, you know, a dollar to $5 to as high as maybe $10 in some cases, mm-hmm. depending on what it is.
To execute the
it's
buying
the
or
the
selling.
It's the transaction itself.
Yeah.
If you have a $5 trading charge on a $100 transaction, that's a 5% trading cost.
Right.
Well, with a mutual fund, the trading cost is absorbed in the management fee. So
mm-hmm.
your $100, maybe it's a 1% fee for the year in that fund, but you're able to put $100 to work, and you're not going to see only $99 to work.
Right. And
your $100 is in the account now.
And what if you wanted to like transfer from this mutual fund to this mutual fund? Maybe.
Well, internally, right. If you're transferring within the same fund family, mm-hmm. you can make those transfers, and there can be tax ramifications,
right.
but there's not transaction ramifications.
Aha, there's the key.
Yeah. So it's very, very efficient to get started as investors that way. Now, the key is that not all funds are created equal. Not mm-hmm. all exchange-traded funds are created equal. And there are other wrappers that can change the cost associated with it. And so cost is something that gets discussed all the time. Right?
Yeah.
The joke is it's like costs are like a little dog, right? Like, Fifi, we got to talk about fees. Fee, 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 fee. So we got to unpack
the
Fifis a little bit here. But I'm looking at the clock here and I'm realizing, you know what? We got to grab a break. So when we do that, we're going to come back. Let's talk about how much does my investment cost? How much am I paying for, or am I paying for it at all?
Ooh.
Yep. That and more when we come back. Stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, we be back. So welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
And we are unpacking packaged investments today.
Yeah, that's right. We're undoing it all.
And you have joined us just in time. If you're just tuning in or if you're getting back after the break, and we're talking about the small dog portion of the program, the fee part.
That's right.
Right? We're going to talk about fees a little bit. Probably something that it drives me bananas professionally.
Okay.
And I will just fess up to this. I have a dog in this fight. Okay. I'll just fess
up. I love the transparency here.
Here's the deal that I'm going to share this first. Okay. And Matt, you have a dog in this fight too, because we work together.
Yeah, I guess so.
But in the spirit of transparency, we operate as a registered investment advisor, and we are very, very close to fee only in our firm.
Mm-hmm.
Let me explain. We're technically fee based, and here's why. We have an insurance agency where for clients that need life insurance, disability, income insurance, long-term care, we have the ability to essentially go to market and find and source that stuff, and we can write it as an insurance agent for our customers. And in most cases, those products have commissions associated with them that they pay the agent. We're fully transparent about what it looks like, so we're not hiding anything. But that's the part that is theoretically commissionable in what we do. Everything else we do, we don't charge commissions for any of our investments. Okay? We charge a fee for the advice that we are providing.
Mm-hmm.
And so do we buy and sell stocks for our customers or mutual funds or exchange-traded funds or other things? Yes, we do. But that's not what we are paid for. We don't get paid by the mutual fund if we buy it or sell it. We don't make a different amount for one investment over another. It is about the results in aggregate, and it's being managed from a fiduciary perspective.
And not all firms are that way.
Not all firms are that way. So we are fee-based, but when it comes to our investment management, we're fee-only. Okay, we don't do commissionable investment management.
Do you want to kind of talk about what it would look like on the flip side of that?
No.
No, okay.
I just want to talk about the fact that why I'm fee sensitive on this one is because people will walk in and they will say, I want to know how much it costs. And you should know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately your investment results at the end of the day are what you keep after all of the fees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's what has transpired from my vantage point, being now in this industry for about 22 years. Okay. Almost maybe 23 years now. It's kind of all runs together after a while. But after more than two decades of doing this, I have seen an evolution where there was what we would call a race to the bottom, where index funds began to advertise that they were a superior index fund because of lower fees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can buy the S&P 500 mutual fund. Why bother to invest in anything else? The S&P outperforms 80% of investment managers over time, and or something along those mm-hmm. lines, and so maybe even higher than that. But so it's going to outperform 80% of its peers over time. Why, if you can't beat them, join them? And if you're going to join them, do it for the lowest cost possible. And in my opinion,
and they just sold that message on repeat.
But that is, it's absolutely accurate, but it's an incomplete or non-comprehensive view of investing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because one, it assumes that everybody has the same risk tolerance and the same drawdown tolerance, and they don't. Not everybody has the risk tolerance of the S&P 500.
Some people have less risk.
It has big upswings and big downswings. It's also not, it's globally diversified in that it has lots of companies that do business around the globe, but it is not globally diversified in the sense that it's not going to have a lot of companies that are in non-US markets.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to look, you're going to miss a whole spectrum of investments. You're also going to look, miss a lot of alternative spectrum. You're going to miss a lot of the commodity spectrum. You're going to miss a lot of the fixed income spectrum. So it is not a a broadly allocated strategy. Mm-hmm. It's all equities, primarily United States and primarily large cap.
Yeah.
Because they're 500 biggest companies. So you're not going to get any smaller mid caps in there. You're not going to get domestic or rather foreign exposure, which means you're going to be also at the sways of currency exchange. And if the U.S. economy is struggling in the globe, then you're going to struggle. Right. So it's not going to protect you against global economic cycles per se. Rah, 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 whatever. The point is that all of those things discarded, if you're going to buy the same investment from two different places, the one with the lower operating expense wins.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's the same
Why
thing.
Why wouldn't it? Yeah, you're buying right? the same index.
I can get two identical cars, but one of them gets better gas mileage. Well, then get that one.
Yeah.
Duh. Right? That's not rocket science. Of course you would do that.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, are they identical cars? Okay, that's really the question that we need to ask as investors. And what is my use case? Did I need a car or a van or a truck or an airplane or a boat or something different, right? You know, so that's the issue. So when we talk about fees, I get a little riled up because, first of all, mutual funds, for example, performance reported net of fees.
I think you need to repeat that because that might have slipped.
Performance reported after the fees have occurred, right?
Right, and
what they show you at the end of the year, like if an investment has really high expenses but really high returns, what do you care?
Right. So if they're reporting 12% and a 3% fee, it's like, well, you got 15.
Well,
that's what you're,
right.
Yeah,
right. I mean,
yeah.
Like they there was 15 before they pulled the fees out, and they cleared 12 mm-hmm. that you got as an
right.
investor.
But someone might have a misconception and look right. at the next fund, and it's like, well, this one's got only 1% fee,
right.
and it did 11%.
So let's talk about what are some of the things that you should consider, right? And I have to use this sort of soft language because I'm not giving you investment advice on how to do it. I'm going to give you some things to consider as you make decisions. And guess what? If this end of the pool is too deep, then don't go in the deep end. Stay where you're comfortable, and then get help. Right
there, you go.
Right. So that's why you have
here
advisors like
education.
Us that are available to help. Is don't get over your head here, but this is learnable stuff, and our listeners are the smartest listeners. So you're going to get this. That's the best part, right? Okay. Thinking about things to consider when evaluating your mutual fund.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is the expense ratio does matter. What are they charging to run the fund?
Mm-hmm.
We already talked about identical funds, lower fees win. But what if the fund's not identical?
That, and also I think another piece of it would be how long do you plan to own the fund, and then looking at, is it a front-loaded fund or the fees on the back end? So there's a lot that goes
right.
into that.
Yeah. Is there a cost to buy it? Is
mm-hmm.
there a cost to sell it if you sell it early? Is it a no-load fund where there's no cost to buy or sell? But there are things that you should look at for how the manager's managing, too.
Maybe like how long the person's been managing the fund
That's
for.
That's part of it, I think. What's the manager tenure? Mm-hmm. I think that now past performance doesn't actually guarantee the future. Just because a manager was good before doesn't mean they're good in the future.
That's true.
But maybe the process that they're using is a reasonably good process. And so it's possible that it will continue to do okay. And so that's certainly one of the things that we're hoping for when mm-hmm. we're reviewing performance. So manager tenure can matter, right? Yeah. Certainly if the manager sucked for the whole time,
then
that's
maybe
a bad sign, right? Yeah. Like, I don't know that I'm jumping on board somebody that has a poor track record.
How's that guy not fired?
But a great track record doesn't guarantee that it will continue mm-hmm. to be great.
What if, I mean, we talked a little bit at the break about, you know, the potential that a fund has reached full capacity. Do you want to talk about that in any?
Okay, so there's a few things. Let me see if I can break apart before we get to that one, a couple others. So mechanical issues. The expense ratio matters, but it's really not exclusive because funds are reported after fees, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what we do know is research studies show that the higher fee that a mutual fund has, the lower the probability that it's going to outperform its peers. Okay, so it's not a guarantee, but it's an indicator. So it's one of many things that we should look at. Here's another thing. This is one that throws people off a lot, but it's called phantom indexing.
Ooh,
what a great term, right?
Phantom I just think indexing. Phantom of the Opera when you say that. Like, you derailed my whole thought process here.
What is
phantom indexing?
Phantom indexing, yeah. Right? Phantom indexing is when you have a mutual fund that looks different. It's like, well, look, we have all these different things, and you say it's different than an index fund,
but it's really the same.
The performance, it walks and talks like an index fund.
So what's the allure to saying that you're different? Is it?
Well, you probably charge different.
Right? Oh, okay.
Oh,
yeah.
We're not an index fund. We're actively
managed.
So
pay us
so
an extra percent. Yeah. And then you get to the nuts and bolts of it, and you're like, but wait a minute.
Well, and that's the issue, is that if you really look into it, there's something that you can use. There's a statistical measure called R-squared value.
Yeah, right? Tell us about R-squared.
So R-squared value essentially is trying to assess how much of the performance of this investment can be explained by its underlying benchmark,
mm-hmm.
right? So, we're benchmarking against the S&P 500. We have an R squared of 0.92. 92% of our performance can be explained by the S&P. It went up 1%, and so 0.92%.
So the question,
92% of our movement was because we're just like the S&P.
So the question becomes, do you want to pay the higher expense ratio for the other 0.8%?
Exactly. It's like, is 0.8% enough? So if you reach an R squared of 0.97, you're like, hello, you are a phantom index. You're mm-hmm. basically the index. There's very little differentiating you between that and the index. So you'll want to, we used to talk about when I was doing my CFP curriculum, that the magic number was about 0.8. So you want an R squared below 0.8. That meant that
you're starting to get some real
difference. You had 20% of the performance was differentiated from the index. Okay, now you've got some real diversification value here. Another thing you want to look at is turnover ratio. Okay, how much buying and selling is going on inside of the fund? And that has to do with the way taxes get managed,
mm-hmm.
because a really high turnover ratio could mean that you may have a surprise tax burden, because one thing people don't often realize about mutual funds is you can experience capital gains when you sell them.
Mm-hmm.
But they can also distribute capital gains while you own them. And then you own a fund that inherits a tax liability
Ooh.
From its prior trades.
I feel like that's something we might not think about.
A lot of people aren't even aware that exists, but you don't want to buy a fund just in time to have it distribute a capital gains liability. So it's something that happens usually in the fourth quarter of the year. You look at when are capital gains going to be declared. Many mutual funds will publish when that occurs. And so you can actually avoid, in some circumstances, buying a fund with poor timing. Like, don't buy it just in time to have capital gains distributed.
So could it work on the reverse side of that, where you're buying it, say, in quarter one and selling in quarter three?
Well, you'd still personally, if you were profitable, you'd still pay the gains for mm-hmm. your own sale.
But
you could own it and mm-hmm. not sell it personally and still have a tax liability be distributed. If it's not protected in a retirement plan,
mm-hmm.
right? So if it's not in a tax-deferred vehicle, it's a retirement plan or some kind of annuity wrapper, that could be the case.
And what happens if this just overwhelms someone, David? And they're like, ah, this is too much for me. What can they do?
They have to wait until after our last break.
No.
And I will tell them.
You missed the last show. I snuck that phone number in like four or five times. So.
Oh, they're going to call. Okay. Yeah. So you call our office, 541-375-0898, and you stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Radio Show, where Matt has been slashing fees left and right.
That's right. Lower, lower. Call us now. It's going lower.
I love it. You know, it's been an interesting show. We've been talking about how let me summarize a few things.
Yep.
Right? Today we've talked about how the investment industry packages things up, and we focused a fair amount on mutual funds. We talked a little bit about exchange-traded funds. The same things can occur. So mutual funds can be placed into insurance contracts called annuities,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to behave a lot like a mutual fund in that case. They're just going to be called variable annuity subaccounts.
Mm-hmm.
That means mutual fund, but for an insurance company.
Okay.
They oftentimes have the same management, and what they may have is slightly different fee structures inside of them. And the fee structure is the thing that a lot of people focus on, and I think it's very important. Paying too much is just like carrying an anchor around with you,
mm-hmm.
right? It's just dead weight that you don't need to be carrying. But we don't want to become myopic in our association of fees versus what is being produced.
Yes.
Okay? And so there are scenarios when it's actually cheaper at an institutional level to pay a fee than if you try to reproduce it on your own. An example might be trying to go out and buy options for yourself. You may not be able to do it at a cheaper level than an institution that's creating the options, as opposed to you going out there and trying to use your broker to do it for you.
Yeah, and right? The time investment that
investment. If you talk about indirect costs, your time has value.
You just can't do it for the same price.
So, but a few of the key takeaways. One is if you feel like this is getting over your head, that's why I always suggest find a trusted investment professional that you can turn to and help as well. There's great resources about this online. There are lots and lots and lots of resources. You Google and you find out all kinds of
Investopedia is a wealth of knowledge.
It is. It's a very good one, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just tomes of knowledge. The issue, I think, when we talk mutual funds in particular, comes down to the fees matter, the structure matters. Are you buying a loaded fund versus an unloaded fund? Loaded means that there's fees built in typically to the salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an investment broker that's selling something to you, they're going to be paid a commission for that event. So it can be on the front end, meaning they get paid up front, or it could be on the back end, meaning they get paid if you sell early.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and it just sort of depends on what's going on there. Lots of different structures. You may hear letters associated. So I bought an A share mutual fund or a B share or a C share or maybe an F share or sometimes an M share or a Y share. All the different letters are different fee classifications.
Do we have time to talk about how we do things a little bit differently in some regard?
So it's so simple. So registered investment advisors or fiduciary advisors that are going to be doing fee investing
mm-hmm.
are going to be buying things at wholesale for you.
This is an important piece.
If it's not at wholesale, then they may still be buying something like an A share. They'll strip all of the commissions out of it. But the higher expense ratio, this is what you need to know. Sometimes the expense ratio of the fund is used to help pay for the transaction costs behind the scenes. Different organizations have what they call shelf space agreements.
Ooh.
They should be disclosed. It might be in the fine print. It's often so fractionally small that I would suggest it doesn't really add up to a whole lot of difference in your account. But if you have a big enough account over time, tiny fractions add up to real numbers. So I'm not being dismissive of it. I'm just suggesting that that's part of the agreement. So share price, like the share classification and the price of the expense in there ultimately is like ballast, or it's like that anchor. So the lower the fee, the more that you keep. Other all things otherwise created equal. Okay. Mm-hmm. The question is it otherwise created equal? And there are lots of things that you need to look at. So you want to look at the style and strategy. You want to look at the statistics underneath, like that R-squared guy we talked about. We don't have time to go into it today, but you may want to look at the Sharpe ratio of the fund, which is mm-hmm. sort of a measure of outperformance that the manager is producing. Mm-hmm. You want to look at beta, which is a measure of how volatile is this compared to its benchmark. You may want to look at the turnover ratio, which will imply how much potential taxation may be involved in this thing, if it's mm-hmm. going to have capital gains that are going to get distributed. So all of those are elements, and we're just scratching the surface of what you can look at. But that's part of what you need to be aware of as an investor, is if you're not in a retirement plan, the taxes are going to matter. If you are in a retirement plan, or you're hiring somebody, or you're doing it yourself, the expenses are going to be part of the cost to carry those investments. Now, for a show for another time, we can talk about how some of the brokers of today are now starting to fake, they're not faking mutual funds, but they're allowing you to buy fractional shares, like Robinhood. You could buy part of a share of Tesla. Not a mutual fund, but it's not direct ownership. It's kind of in no man's land, but we're out of time for today.
Oh,
all right.
We'll have to
Matt,
part
how
two
do
next
they
week.
Reach us?
Yes, give us a call. Take your phone out. I'm giving you a second. 541-375-0898.
All right. Well, we're out of time for now. So until next time, this has been Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Littlejohn Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.